The thing nobody tells you about having a hobgoblin contractually bound to your service is that you can't make plans. Well, you can make them, I suppose, but following through is going to be difficult because you'll find that he's smeared bacon grease in the underwear you put on after showering, and now you have to shower again and resign yourself to being late. I pride myself on punctuality, but when the choices are to be late or to be on time and sit down with greasy bacon bollocks, the schedule's going out the window. The reason nobody told me about the thing with hobgoblins is that nobody has them in their service anymore. And I was learning why almost daily. Hobgoblins were expected to take the piss out of their employers a little bit. There had to be a downside to employing them, or else everyone would want a teleporting errand boy. The problem was that a little bit was very subjective, and Buck Foy and I had vastly different ideas about what it meant. Buck wanted to become a legend among his kind and make service to humans common again. So he approached all of his duties, including piss-taking, with the idea that it had to be legendary. It did mean that he did what I asked him to do infallibly, albeit with much complaining. But it also meant that I could never ever relax, because he was always planning how best to mess with me next. I demanded that he must be creative and non-destructive in his piss-taking, in hopes that my property would survive and perhaps it would slow him down. It was proving to be more creative than I'd anticipated. And largely non-destructive, I must admit, save for that pair of ruined underwear. Though I feared he might be destroying himself. He'd been drinking an awful lot, and had recently discovered that hobgoblins could get high on capsaicin, the chemical that provided the heat in any pepper you'd care to name. He'd never enjoyed a curry in all his many years, or he'd have learned it earlier. But a trip to a Mexican restaurant in Philadelphia revealed this one weird trick to get a hobgoblin smashed. Between salsa chugging and whiskey guzzling, he was often off his nut, as he was now, giggling at his prank until he fell over all too easily. "You need to cut back on the bottle, Buck," I told him, or rather typed into my text-to-speech app. "I'm getting worried. There has to be some reason you're doing this to yourself. Should I make an appointment with a therapist?"
"What? No! Why are you serious? No! I know what's in my head. I mean, everybody's staring at their future and wondering if their past is gonna be a good show or a laugh, ain't they? There's no need to state the obvious to a stranger."
That was not anything close to the sort of answer I expected.
"Are you saying you're worried about your legacy and that's driving you to drink?"
"No. Yes. No. Well, maybe."
"We'll talk more later since I have to go, but in the meantime, consider the possibility that your legacy might become drunken sot, and whether you have any power to ensure that doesn't happen."
He scrunched up his face in annoyance.
"God's grundle, old man! Can you be any more of a wet grey sock?"
"I'm being a friend to you now. If you don't have any power to stop, we'll approach it differently."
"Are you ordering me to stop?"
"No, I'm ordering you to think about it. Be self-aware and honest about what you're doing. We'll come back to it."
He might well be in the grips of alcoholism already, but his answer, a bit vague, hinted that he had a trunk of feelings to unpack, and he was drinking to avoid doing that work. If I could get him to begin, there was a chance he'd realise he could simply leave the booze out. That might be considered foolish optimism by some, but it was born out of personal experience.